Welcome to LedgerCast. My name is Brian Krogsgaard, and today we're talking about taxes with Jordan Bass. If you go to taxingcryptocurrency.com, and you can also follow him at taxingcrypto. He's a CPA with a lot of experience in accounting, and specifically with crypto, they do consultations and they do filings if you're in the state of California, but they can do a consultation with anyone. This is primarily geared towards American traders, but we dig into a lot of the questions that I think that people will have if you're trading and investing crypto. I think this is a really informative episode and that you'll enjoy it. Go to ledgerstatus.com for this and more. Rate us in iTunes, all that good stuff. We're excited to be back regular on the podcast. Josh Olswich is on this episode with me as well. Josh brought Jordan to me to have this discussion, so I'm thankful for that. Be sure to check out everything Josh is doing at Brave New Coin and on his YouTube channel and all that good stuff. He's always busy. With that, here's the show. Hello and welcome to LedgerCast. My name is Brian Krogsgaard. I'm back today with a familiar face and friend, Josh Olswich, who goes by Carpe Noctem online. Hey, Josh.
How's it going, Brian? Infamous, you might say.
Infamous. Yeah. I can't talk to you on Twitter in a public forum without the trolls just coming out in force. And it's like they don't read, I guess.
Yeah, it's interesting.
When you say, yeah, it's like if you ever share an idea for a bull thesis and then it doesn't work out, it doesn't matter that you said it was invalidated like $7,000 ago.
But exactly.
Anyway, so yeah, it's good to talk to you. We're going to have a couple episodes here back to back, so I'm excited about that. And you actually said you wanted to do a tax episode, and that's something I've wanted to do for a long time. And we have an accountant on with us today who has crypto exposure, understands the market. Jordan Bass is here with us, coming from the Los Angeles area. Hey, Jordan.
Hey, guys. How's it going today?
It's going well. I'm glad that you could join us for this episode, a conversation about tax stuff. It's one of those things where, you know, we don't like to think about it until we absolutely have to. And I think in the run-up of the bull market, a lot of people unfortunately ignored it and faced a lot of consequences to that. So we're happy to have you on here, and we're going to talk about several kind of common questions and maybe some things that are more unique to like crypto traders that we hope that you can bring us your expertise on. So why don't you start by just letting us know, you know, who are you and why do you have familiarity with crypto with your accounting practice?
Right. So I am a California licensed CPA. I started getting involved in crypto, not really from a tax perspective, but just an interest perspective in around 2014, 2015, not really an investor, just seeing what was going on. And when I graduated college, I started working at one of the big four firms downtown, and all these people were talking about their crypto investments, and I said, all right, maybe it's time for me to get involved. So I made an investment, and initially I was thinking, oh, this is cool, I'm watching how it's going, whatever, but didn't really think about the tax aspect because not many people did. There was just that one, you know, IRS guidance in 2014, and that was pretty much all we had. So I figured, hey, if I'm confused about what's going on and I'm a tax person, I'm a CPA, everyone else has to be confused about what's going on or the taxability of these events. So that's where it really started. It was mostly just helping my friends out and trying to figure out along the way what's going on. And then one of my buddies made me a hat, and it was taxing cryptocurrency is what it said. So I said, hey, that's pretty cool. Let's run with it. And I started to get on Twitter and just write some tweets, not quite the presence as Josh, but you know, a little bit of a presence there. And from there, people started to reach out, and I figured it was time to form this type of practice, a crypto tax practice. And it's something that really interests me, and obviously it interests you guys and interests many people around the world that don't really know much about the taxability of their transactions.
Yeah.
Well, so why don't we start? Go ahead, Josh.
No, so I just want to say I like scouted out 4 or 5 taxing crypto people online that I could get a hold of, and Jordan was definitely one that stood out to me as far as just somebody who got back to me in a timely manner at the time, and we got everything straightened out. So yeah, I mean, it's worked out for me, definitely. You know, he saved my bacon big time. So yeah, that's why I wanted to get him on, talk to him. You know, even if no matter who you're using, it's just good to know what to do. I think being like preventative in some way, or being, I don't know, having that mindset of like, this is what I need to do and when and why and blah, blah, blah. Because like, I had no freaking clue until last year, you know? So anyway, go ahead, Brian. Yeah.
So I want to start with some of the basics, and I'll say that by and large, cryptocurrency exchanges are very inconsistent in terms of how they report your trade information to you and to the government. And to my knowledge, only a couple of the American exchanges even file like a 1099-K, I think, on your behalf. And it's only under certain trading requirements. So essentially, we're in a self-reporting type of situation for our cryptocurrency trades. So let's just start with what are the consequences of that, where it's largely a self-reported tax mechanism rather than something where an exchange or a broker is filing anything with the government on your behalf. What does that mean?
Right. So you hit it right on the head. You know, if you have an E-Trade account or some sort of brokerage account and they issue you your 1099s and that data is also going to the IRS, it's very easy to match that. That's what they do. So if you're reporting, you'll even see on those statements like this was reported to the IRS. Maybe sometimes it wasn't, but when it comes to crypto and Coinbase in particular, we can just start there. Those 1099Ks. What they're doing with that is they're reporting the activity. There is no real infrastructure there where they can actually calculate gains and losses. What I've seen with that is even when someone withdraws from Coinbase to a different exchange or to a wallet, they're just recording that type of activity. So if there's activity over $20,000, you're going to receive that 1099K. And what it does is it puts an added layer of complexity for the taxpayer, because then they have to go in and reconcile all that information. And that's really where we are today. There isn't really an exchange that puts that information in an easy to read format and also actually calculates the tax that's taking place there. So what we have to do, and really all taxes, it's on you, it's self-reported. But like you said, there's traceability levels with the IRS, but with crypto and Coinbase or these US exchanges that are issuing 1099Ks like Gemini as well, is it just adds that layer of complexity. And honestly, for people that aren't as well-versed in tax or understanding in what's going on, it creates a lot of anxiety for them too. So that's really where people like me and other crypto tax professionals come in, is try to speed up the process, make it as accurate as can be with the records that we're provided with, but also relieve that level of anxiety knowing that you have a professional helping you, guiding you, walking you through this crypto aspect of your taxes that could be very confusing.
Yeah. So the basics of traditional equities tax reporting would be that you get this report and it's got a summary of your inflows and outflows. So it's really based on trading volume. And so the numbers can look a lot bigger than like your account size. And that's the same as it will be if you get actually official documentation from these exchanges, which can be intimidating for people. And then your tax basis on that is essentially long-term versus short-term taxes, where things that are held for less than a year, you're taxed at the same as like your basic income tax rate. And then things that are held for longer than a year are taxed with long-term capital gains taxes. So if we don't get something like that, a similar report from a crypto exchange, I've used software to help me figure out that same information. Do you have recommended tools for like, what's the best way for someone to bring their trade history and information to you in order to help them? Or what do you recommend along those lines?
Right. Great question. So there are actually, I don't even know how many softwares they are offering to traders right now. There's tons. I feel like a new one kind of pops up every day. But there are, you know, there's the classic legacy type of softwares like Bitcoin.tax that people use, and coin tracking. A lot of people want to do it themselves. So what we do is, if they have a preferred service or a preferred reconciliation service that they use, that's fine. We can help them and guide them through that process. But what we've realized with all of these softwares, and they're really great tools, they really are, but none of them them would come out with the same numbers. So there's obviously something going on there. So what we do is if someone brings us that type of report, or if they want us to analyze their portfolio and come up with these calculations, we go in and essentially audit that report and make sure that there aren't any issues where someone has, you know, a ton of zero cost basis coins that's creating this huge taxable event on many trades where they're saying, hey, I didn't make this much money this past year, but for some reason I have thousands and thousands of dollars of gains in this report. So I think that those crypto tax softwares are great services and they're a really good foundation point and starting block, but it's always good, in my opinion, to have a fresh set of eyes going through and making sure that that it's accurate. But again, I think most of our clients, when they come to us with reconciliations that they've done on their own, most of the time those are more accurate than the crypto tax offers. But again, you have people with thousands and thousands and thousands of trades on a quarterly basis. They're not going to be able to do that by themselves.
So what are like the worst things you could do when you're preparing for your own taxes? Like, what have you seen from crypto people that are some like easily avoidable mistakes?
Well, the worst thing you could do is to not have accurate records or to not be pulling data from exchanges on a regular basis and then forget you made these trades on one exchange, or maybe an exchange goes down and you can't access that information anymore, and then you're stuck with missing information, you're missing data. So there's a hole in your trades, and with that creates another issue where you could have something that you're reporting where you're saying, hey, I have no basis in any of these coins, I don't know what to do. So that's something where I'd say the biggest area for people to improve on is just to keep accurate records and export that information on a consistent basis, because I mean, we've seen in the past 2 weeks there's been exchanges going down left and right, where, you know, owners have private keys and then, you know, no one has access to their funds and they can't, it happens all the time in crypto. So I would say that is a big thing, records. And also, two, common misconception, if you're on crypto Twitter, which is a crazy place to be sometimes, there's a lot of people that, you know, just don't think that they need to pay tax, even if they know the rule. They know the rules that every trade creates a taxable event. They still believe that they don't need to pay tax. And I've had conversations with people like that, and sometimes it's hard to, you know, get through, but eventually they usually come around.
Yeah. So I can think of, there's Quadriga, there's Cryptopia, there's Liqui. Those are all exchanges that I think have shut down like in 2019. I mean, I would imagine a lot of our audience spent time on at least one of those exchanges in the previous year. So that's totally a good piece of advice. And I know for me, I didn't get bit by any of those, but I've traded on a couple of those exchanges before and thankfully had that information mostly from 2017 trades. But the fact that you can't go back there and get it, like if you need to do something else, is something to keep in mind for sure. So you mentioned cost basis per trade. Now in 2017, I heard from a lot of people that took these exceptions, where the exception certainly went away for the next year, but this what's it like, the 1031 like kind exchange type of thing, and some other stuff. But is it for now, is it basically you treat a trade in crypto no different than if you were trading a stock, like you're making a per trade transaction and that's what you need to calculate?
Yeah. So with the new Tax Cuts and Jobs Act, that 1031 exchange possibility, which was, in our opinion, aggressive to begin with for crypto, goes out of the way because it's only applicable to real property. So yeah, on a transaction by transaction basis, that's how you would report these transactions, whether it's a trade, you know, you could have purchased some Bitcoin and then paid somebody for services. That's also a taxable event because you're getting a benefit from what you're giving, and you could have had either a gain or a loss. There could have been that tax phrase that we use, a net accession to wealth, where your Bitcoin went from 1,000 to 1,200 and then you purchase something with it and there's a gain there. There's tons of different ways where there's taxable events, but it's not something that we were recommending, the 1031 exchanges. It was something that you could have done in 17, but yes, you're correct. In going forward, until they revisit that in the Tax Cut and Jobs Act, the like-kind exchange are only applicable to real property.
Can you talk about the USD basis versus the Bitcoin relative basis? This is actually where I found the most help from software. So I used Bitcoin. I've used Bitcoin Tax and now I've used Coin Tracking. I've used both of them. And the biggest help for me has been if I made a Bitcoin relative trade, like say I bought Litecoin, but I bought it with Bitcoin, it's a double transaction. Can you explain the thesis behind that and why crypto to crypto is not exempt from some of those types of rules?
Right. So I'll give you like a high level of how it works. So essentially, and then maybe the theory behind why that is a taxable event. Let's say back in the day when Bitcoin was at $1,000, you purchased one Bitcoin, and that price in US dollar value, although it's still only one Bitcoin, increases to $3,000. Once you use that Bitcoin, although you're still using that one Bitcoin, you have $3,000 worth of purchasing power. So if you go and buy Litecoin, like in your transaction that you said, and it's $3,000 worth of Litecoin, although it's one, you're spending one Bitcoin, that increase in purchasing power, that net accession to wealth, that's the tax phrase, you're going to have to pay tax on that. So that $2,000 spread, and then depending on how long you held it, of course, it could be long-term or short-term. But then that Litecoin that you purchased, let's say you bought 10, or let's make it more realistic, 20 or 30 Litecoin with that $3,000 during that time frame, it would assume that basis that you paid. So that $3,000 that you paid would be the total basis of all those coins. So if you had 30 coins, then each coin would have a $100 basis. And it makes sense. If you think about it, you could, with the like-kind exchanges, how that works is you delay the tax until the final disposition, but you're still going to be paying the tax. It's just a deferral of tax. But the way it's calculated in real life and for crypto taxes is on each of those transactions, there is a spread. It could help you and it can hurt you. You could have a US dollar loss, but increase your Bitcoin value. And if you're a long-term Bitcoin bull, then that's something that's really attractive to investors when they're looking at their portfolio and analyzing, hey, maybe I can take a tax loss here, but really I'm increasing my Bitcoin stack. So that's also another thing that we do for people if they want, you know, to see those reconciliations in real time, like the softwares that you mentioned. You can see which coins or which portfolio holdings maybe would be good to sell off at a certain point to recognize a loss, but still have more Bitcoin purchasing power. So yeah, it is a little confusing. Using, you know, when you have two layers, it's kind of, with your example, there's three layers. There's US dollars, Bitcoin, and then the Litecoin. But what we're trying to do and what the crypto tax professionals are trying to do is to make it a little easier to understand when we explain it. So hopefully hopefully you understood what I was saying there.
Yeah, I haven't heard it quite that way. I have another question about the Bitcoin relative value. And this is one that I've never really seen a lot of clarification about, but I'm very curious your opinion because I had thoughts on it during the tax year. But for somebody like me, where I entered initial crypto purchases were like throughout the first half of 2017. And you know, I could have bought Bitcoin for like $1,500 or I could have bought Bitcoin for $4,500. And then if I'm making an altcoin trade, what ended up being the difference between if I calculated using LIFO or FIFO, so last in, first out, first in, first out, made a relatively significant difference on how the tax would be accounted for. Because if I used, last in, first out, I think that's the right term. Yeah, if I used LIFO, I could reduce the tax burden. But on traditional equity markets, you actually have to assign that it was LIFO or at the time of the trade. Whereas in crypto markets, that's obviously not a thing. So is this a opportunity that people have to save a little money, or do you think it's also aggressive? And how can you document whether you intend something to be that way? Do you need to do it at the time of the trade, or can you do it when you file? What are your thoughts around that type of stuff?
Right. So in traditional legacy markets, the go-to cost method is FIFO. And that's not because it's what's required or it's what's mandated by, you know, the government or the IRS. It's just what these brokerage accounts want you to do is to have the ability to have long-term capital gains. And if you're using a LIFO method where it's last in, first out instead of FIFO, you're most likely going to be building up short-term gains, which are taxed at your ordinary income tax level. With with your situation, what you're saying, it makes sense that there would be savings specifically in 17 using a LIFO method, because if you were buying consistently throughout the year and you, let's say you purchased in December and also made a lot of trades in December, that Bitcoin value was a lot higher. So when you're taking that coin out, it's a smaller spread to recognize that gain. What we do is we apply either LIFO, FIFO. There are specific cost allocation methods that you can use as well. But what we advise and our approach to this is to stay consistent across the board. You don't want to use FIFO in 17 and then LIFO in 18 and then FIFO. You got to stay consistent across the board. And sometimes that takes a lot of planning for what you think is going to be happening in the future as well. Because, I mean, no one's a savant, obviously, with predicting prices, but there's ways to analyze the market. So if you think something's going to happen,
except for Josh,
if you think something's going to happen in the future, then maybe that affects how you take your cost method to begin with. So again, yeah, it's a great point you made. FIFO allows for long-term capital gain rates traditionally, because usually if you make an investment in 17, sell something in 18, 19, whatever, if you haven't used up all of that, that basis, then it could allow for that. But, really, it's up to the client how they want to pursue, but we always advise to stay consistent across the board. Pick a method and go with that method across the board.
What do you see as far as what the IRS could do as for clarity of taxes for crypto? Like, what if they were sitting across from you right now, what would you like to advise them to help the situation?
Well, first and foremost, I don't think it's really an IRS decision, but I would think it would be great for everyone if there was some sort of de minimis rule where if you're using crypto to purchase something, like, I don't know, a coffee or breakfast, or maybe you go to the dry cleaner and they accept crypto for some reason, that you wouldn't be owing tax on that transaction. That's first and foremost for me, because you see on these 8949, on these statements where you report your capital gains on Schedule D, you see all these micro transactions, literally $1, $2, $4, sometimes 5 cents gains and losses. And it doesn't, I know that that's occurring with trading, but if people are using and keeping accurate records of transactions, that's something that it doesn't seem reasonable to the lay person to be charged a spread on what you're paying for in addition to actually paying for something. So that would be first and foremost. And then second, it would be nice if we had some more guidance, just a little bit more clarity about how to treat, you know, airdrops, how to treat ICOs, we do it based on what we have available to us, and tax professionals take, you know, the rules for different asset classes and apply them as best as we can to crypto. But if we can get some specific guidance, maybe that wouldn't be good for me. Maybe there wouldn't be that gray area where people would need a tax professional to figure some things out. But I think it would be really helpful for the community long-term, and also maybe increase the adoption level of cryptocurrency, which I'm sure we all would love to see happen.
Are there any potential tax advantages for when using margin trading, or are there any special things that we should take into account when we're doing our tax preparation based on taking trades with margin rather than fully collateralized trades?
The only thing that I would say to take into account is that it adds a large layer of complexity, because like you said earlier, with exchanges and legacy markets, when they're reporting or issuing those reports, they're pretty thorough and they have the information. But I'm sure if you've taken part in, you know, margin trading, any exchange, the records that they provide you are not great. They're really not, in limited information. So I would say, you know, there could be some benefits. You know, you're essentially borrowing money and paying interest on that money, but the headache that it could cause, I mean, if that's what you do and you're a great margin trader and you're making money, I say more power to you. But if you're more of a novice trader and you're entering into these leverage trades because you're following a call on Twitter, which a lot of people do, it's not it's I was talking to you, Josh. A lot of people, you know, fall into this rabbit hole where they're A, they're losing money, and then B, it creates an added level of tax complexity where if they try to do it themselves, it's going to seem as if, you know, they have a gain on these transactions when they don't. So it's hard to trace what's really going on. So my only advice to those people would be make sure you know what you're doing with margin trading, because A, you can lose money very quickly, and B, make sure you keep your own personal accurate records of what's happening so that when the time does come, you have an ability to trace what went down and how those trades occurred.
One of the reasons I ask if it's advantageous, I'll use a pretty straightforward example. For Americans, one of the only, well, there's a few regulated legal places like Cboe or CME where you can trade Bitcoin. But let's use the retail exchange Kraken, where you can trade with up to 5x leverage. So is there a potential advantage for if I want to trade as if I'm trading my entire portfolio, if I keep 80% on a hardware wallet where I don't trade it, and then I have 20% on an exchange, but I trade it at 5x leverage, I'm trading as if it's the value of the whole portfolio, but I'm only exposing 20% of those coins to actual trades where there would be taxable events and all that kind of stuff. Is that a situation where there's an advantage because you're not creating tax events?
I see what you're saying. So that's more of a leverage strategy overall, like finance type of stuff where you're determining risk management, risk reward type of things. But in terms of tax, whatever income you do make on that margin trade, so if you're using a smaller amount to make that trade, but it still ends up in a large amount of income, the tax is the tax. So it could be beneficial from a portfolio standpoint, but from what I've seen, you know, and from my experience, I don't margin trade, but when whatever income you do generate through that, whether or not you're using that smaller amount, there is the spread based on what you're essentially loaned, the money that you're loaned. And that increase from there is you're going to be paying tax on that money regardless. It's not like you're saving necessarily tax. I don't think it's a tax deferral or tax reduce strategy, but personally, when I think of, you know, margin trading, I think of it more as just a simple trading strategy or a risk reward type of management strategy that has the same similar. There are a little bit different tax effects because there are more things going on with potentially paying interest or increased fees, but it's the same type of taxability.
Okay. Yeah. The reason I was bringing that up is because my thought process is if you trade with leverage for your active account and those are short-term trades, then you're only exposing that 20% to short-term tax rates. If you're holding the other 80% for greater than a year, and you can limit that percentage of what you're trading to long-term capital gains.
Yeah, I mean, if you're having that 80% in a different wallet, no cold storage essentially, then that's not going to be active at all. So yeah, but then again, it goes back to the cost allocation method, because if you choose a particular method where maybe you make a trade 6, 7, 8 months down the line, even if it's a difference between 17 and 18 or 18 and 19, it's not the year. It's not the actual tax year that creates the, you know, the long-term or short-term gain. It's the amount of days, the time. So it could actually, when you put it that way, if that's the way you wanted to approach that, where you kept it in 80% in cold storage and maybe knew for sure and planned out your trades to plan long-term and short-term, then definitely it could be advantageous to you. And that's part of the reason why most of the people that we have come to us to do those reconciliations, they want to have that information so they know exactly what their basis is in their whatever holdings there are. Not really many people are only in Bitcoin or only in alts. Like, they're pretty well diversified. So having that understanding and knowing your basis before you take that strategy, which could be advantageous, is something that is really important and actually could be beneficial for all trading. It doesn't matter margin or not.
Josh, you got one?
That's really all I had. I mean, what you were talking about was important. I was going to get to the margin. You mentioned the airdrops and the ICO stuff.
That's yeah, what about stuff with a zero cost basis like an airdrop?
Right. So there's really two kind of thought processes here. The one that we think makes most sense and is probably the most conservative way is recognizing that airdrop as income, as other income, right when you receive it, and then taking on that basis going forward. However, the more practical way and what people typically do and what we have people do is take on a zero basis, because there's times where you receive an airdrop where you don't even know, first of all, and second, you don't ever use or utilize that token. So if you take on a zero basis when you receive that, and then there's never any activity, there's no tax. And that's not really an aggressive position, because it's reasonable. It's reasonable to take on a zero basis in a token that you didn't maybe even know you received. And that's the way we typically report and treat those airdrop tokens. But it is confusing. There's no definitive way to do it. So there's really two kind of school of thoughts there.
I have another question that it's been one of the big reasons why I've, for the most part, stayed away from such entities. But what is the scenario where you have someone who's trading somewhere that by law they're not supposed to be trading there? Is there something special in terms of, because going back to them exchanges reporting in legacy markets for you, if you trade at E-Trade or wherever you said, they report on your behalf. In crypto, none of that happens. So let's say an American is trading against the terms of service for BitMEX, and they have gains or losses. Is there anything that a taxpayer needs to be concerned about from a liability perspective, or can they take the losses if they lost money, or like what kind of like flags or warnings or whatever do you have for that type of situation?
So obviously there are exchanges where U.S. persons don't have access theoretically, but they gain access. We know that. You know that. Everyone really involved in crypto knows that, especially, you know, with a place like or an exchange like BitMEX, they're pretty lenient, I would say, with allowing people on to use their platform. So the best thing you can do, I mean, I would never advise anyone to do that and abandon the law and say, hey, go ahead and trade on those exchanges. I personally believe that at the end of the day, everyone should have access to these ways of trading cryptocurrencies, but I know there are regulations and everyone knows there are regulations in place and they're really to protect the investor. But if you somehow gain access to BitMEX and you start transacting there, the worst thing you could do is do that and then not report it. That's the worst thing you could do. Because if you don't report your activity, even if it's a US regulated exchange, that's not tax minimization, that's tax avoidance. So what I would recommend, and we don't really have many clients on exchanges that aren't, I don't think I've seen any actually for a tax preparation perspective, but for reconciliations, yes. What I recommend to them is report all everything, because US taxpayers anyways are taxed on worldwide income. I know that's not really applicable to going to an exchange that you don't really typically or shouldn't have access to, but you are generating income there or you're generating losses, and it's best to report all your activity specifically, because you don't want anyone coming after you for not reporting something, especially if it's a loss and you can receive a benefit from that. This is kind of getting off topic here, but I've had so many people over the last few weeks call me and say, hey, you know, like, I think I have a loss in 18, or I had a loss in 17, but I don't know how, I'm not sure how people had losses in 17, but I had a loss in 17, but I didn't report it. So, now what do I do? And I say, well, if you didn't report any of your, first I ask them if they recognize any of those losses, not like, you know, you bought Bitcoin, and this example makes no sense, but you bought Bitcoin in early 17 and then towards the end of the year it went down in price. It didn't, so that's why I'm unsure how this happened, but did you recognize it? Okay, yes, you did. Did you report it? No. So if you didn't report that on your return, you can't get the benefit of that loss. And there's things like that. There are people, just little things. But getting back to what you're saying about, BitMEX or other exchanges that they couldn't really, shouldn't have access to, I would say from a professional standpoint, report everything, report all of your activity in good faith, and you should not run into any issues with the IRS. And if you do run into issues with the IRS, they're not out here to try to hurt you. They're not trying to, you know, ruin your life. They're trying to make sure that you're paying your share of taxes that are owed. It's not something that anyone should have a crazy amount of anxiety about. And the only only way that you would is if you know you're doing something maybe nefarious or something to try to avoid paying taxes.
Yeah. So the difference being you're trading outside of the terms of service of an exchange, but that doesn't mean that you're trading or you're doing something in a nefarious manner. It's not necessarily income that's outside the law. It's platform participation that's against terms of service. So in that case, I guess there's more of a burden on the exchange than the trader is what I understand.
I mean, you can look at it that way. The way to look at it really is from a tax perspective is if there's activity that needs to be reported, you should report all of that activity. And that's what we tell people and that's what we advise people. Just because, like you mentioned, the terms of service maybe don't allow access to U.S. persons, they're still generating income there or maybe losses, but they're still generating income. There is still taxable events occurring. So it doesn't give them the right to essentially break the law in the terms of service and then break the law again and not pay the tax on that. So yeah, definitely you hit the nail on the head there. It's best, always best, especially in this asset class, in this space where there's a lot of uncertainty, to be as reasonable and conservative as possible.
I only have one more question, which is another one where I really had a hard time figuring this out for myself and had to have a conversation with my accountant in terms of how to label it is what it gets to. So because things aren't self or reported by the participating exchanges, or at least most of them, whenever you're claiming investment income, capital gains, losses, whatever it is, I was unsure to what degree of detail it needed to be on the report versus what degree of documentation I needed to have in case there were questions, and then also how to label it. Like, do you label it investment income or do you say gains from trading Litecoin? You know what I mean? Like, I had no idea. So I'm curious what y'all recommend, because obviously as a taxpayer, we want to limit our red flags that we could raise, like for an audit or something. So what are the guidelines around that in terms of just trying to limit those red flags?
Right. So I think honestly, all different accountants and CPAs and tax preparers do things differently. What we do, and you know, for someone that has maybe more trades, like maybe someone like Josh, who is very active, right? He has a lot of trades. If you have, you know, a lot of trades, then it's best to attach a statement to the return, what we do, report the amount in the currency that's being transacted in, obviously the date acquired and the date that it was sold, and then you report the gain and loss. And so you can do that transaction by transaction, which is how we do it, because it's best to just report all the activity once you know you have an accurate return and an accurate gain calculation and cost basis calculation. We just report the entire thing as an attachment to the return. And it's very simple to do. Every taxpayer knows how to attach statements to returns, whether they're e-filing or paper filing. But some people have different opinions. Some people don't report it that way. And that's fine. Just as you mentioned, you know, if there was an audit, they do have those work papers to back up what they did show. And if the money is there and they're paying tax on what they actually reconciled and had and all their activity, then there shouldn't be an issue. If an IRS agent comes and audits and say, hey, where's all this activity? And you show them the transactions and it all equals out to what you reported, there's probably going to be no change and there's not going to be an issue. But for the purposes of being conservative and full, you know, just having a full reporting of what's happening and recording all of that, what we do is we take every single transaction and record it and attach it to the return. So when the IRS sees it, here it is. This is all the activity. If you have any questions, feel free, because everything is being reported right then and there. And you know, if you came and it came to the point where there was an audit, they really wouldn't need any more information than what's on the return, unless something crazy happened and they deemed it to not be reasonable.
I lied. I have one more question, because I think we'll get in trouble if we don't ask it. So we've been talking a lot about gains. We haven't talked as much about losses. And so let's say someone lost money in 2018, the most recent tax year. How do they, or like, what are the limits to how they qualify those losses, carry them forward? Like, should you, I know the idea of like, what's it called? A wash sale doesn't apply to crypto. Like, what kind of general tips are there around realizing losses and then accounting for them?
All right. So that was a kind of a twofold question. I'm going to attack the wash sale rules first. So, well, first and foremost, if you participated, this is just food for thought for everyone that's going to be listening and for you guys. If you participated in an ICO and then down the line, they say that that was a security, then wash sale rules would apply to that because wash sale rules apply to securities. Okay. So that's a little added layer of complexity there, but no.
Nice.
Yes, wash sale rules are not applicable to crypto because crypto is not a commodity or security, it's property, right? So essentially what you would do to recognize these losses is A, you would need to know first what your cost allocation method is, FIFO, LIFO, specific ID, to know what batch is being sold. But like at the end of 2018, when Bitcoin went down, we can use a very simple example. Let's say you were at a holiday party in 2017 and everyone was talking about Bitcoin and you said, God, I really need to buy Bitcoin. Like I really need some of this exposure to this asset class. And so you purchase one Bitcoin for $15,000. And throughout the entire year, you're seeing the price go down and then maybe it comes up a little bit and go down and comes up, but you don't sell anything. You don't do anything. And this is a very simple example. But at the end of the year, you're like, you know what? I still believe in Bitcoin. I still believe it's going to be more than $15,000 price that I bought. But right now, this is just too much for me. And it's at $5,000. And you sell your Bitcoin for $5,000. You've now recognized a $10,000 loss, okay? If wash sale rules were applicable, then you would have to wait 30 days to repurchase that Bitcoin for that transaction to be effective, essentially, where you can recognize that loss. But because wash sale rules aren't, I mean, many people differ in their opinion, but could you buy it back the second after, the minute after, hour, day, a week? I'm not sure what the actual answer is because we don't have that type of guidance. But what does seem reasonable is maybe within a few days, right? Some people want to be more aggressive and do it within the hour. But then you've now recognized that $10,000 loss because wash sale rules don't apply to crypto and you buy back. So you have now one Bitcoin, but at a $5,000 basis, right? If that's all of your activity for the year, for your capital activity, because trading crypto is a capital activity, capital gain, capital loss, you'd have that $10,000 loss, but that can offset any other gains. But in this example that I said, you have no other activity. So you can reduce your ordinary income by $3,000, right? And that $7,000 difference that you couldn't recognize as a loss for tax reasons gets carried forward to the next year. Then in the next year, your precious Bitcoin that you bought back at $5,000 goes back up to $15,000 and you sell it because you're saying, hey, you know what? Now I'm breaking even with my initial my initial investment, and I want to just see what's going to happen from now. You have a $10,000 gain, but because you have that $7,000 loss carry forward, you're only paying tax on $3,000 of that gain. So it's a strategic move. You can harvest your tax losses at the end of the year, look at your portfolio and see, hey, this is going to give me some tax benefits if I sell these off. And if you do believe in that coin, or you do believe if it's Bitcoin or some other altcoin, you can buy it back at a later date. And you're not going to be threatened by these wash sale rules that say that loss is going to be disallowed.
Cool. Yeah, that's great to know.
Gotcha.
If you have any final thoughts, if you want to give some advice or whatever to folks, now's your chance.
I appreciate the open floor. We did touch on something earlier today, and it was with the hacked exchanges or lost access to exchanges. And what I've seen it a lot in the last 2 weeks, just talking to people on their phone. We do free consultations, 20-minute consultations. People come to us and tell us their issues. We try to help them out. And what we've seen is a lot of people have this gap, a big layer of gaps in their records. And so what we do, and just want to let people know, other people do this as well, and you can do it yourself, but it's best probably to have maybe an accountant or a professional do it, is we can create synthetic trades as reasonable as possible to fill those gaps. So you're not being charged with a 1500, 3000, whatever random amount of gain because you have a zero basis in some of your coins when you know there was activity. So it's best to do this when you are doing this. If you're going to do do it by yourself or if you hire a tax professional to do it, be conservative, be reasonable. But definitely do it, because if you had this activity and this happened to you, it's unfortunate, but there are ways to kind of maneuver around this and create these synthetic trades so you're not on the hook for a crazy, ridiculous tax bill. And in addition to that, most important, I mentioned it on Twitter. I think Josh actually retweeted me, so I appreciate you, Josh. A lot of people are calling me about these 1099-Ks. Do not feel worried that you're going to owe hundreds of thousands or whatever the amount of transactions are on that 1099-K in tax, because it's just a method for them to report that there is activity over a certain threshold. You need to reconcile your information and your data, and then you can really see what you would owe. I don't want people to freak out, because it's happened. I could probably mention 10 times it's happened in the last 3 days where people are calling me freaking out. So that's about it. I just thank you guys for having me. It was nice talking to you guys and appreciate it.
Yeah. Thanks for coming on. And that was an amazing point that you made, because that was one of the issues that I had with all the crypto tracking softwares. And it was typically around wallet transfers. So say you have a fiat on ramp like Coinbase or Gemini or whatever, and then you send it off to a Binance. A lot of times the cost basis would be, it would say it was zero because it couldn't find like where that came from. And so I had to go and self-reconcile a whole lot of wallet transfers, which theoretically, that's what you should be doing, is transferring stuff to a wallet after you buy it. But like getting that data from an exchange and into something to track your trades, that created several points of contention for me. So I'm glad that you brought that up.
Yeah, definitely. That's probably the biggest pitfall in doing the tracking yourself. And again, it's what we do, so we don't mind doing it. But sometimes people like you guys, you know, your time's valuable. You got other things going on. So sometimes it's best to just kick it off to a tax professional and let them handle the work for you.
Awesome. Jordan, hey, what website do people need to go to? What Twitter account do they need to follow? And if they have tax concerns for this year, by when should they get in touch?
Right. That's actually a good point. We are kind of getting loaded with people coming in. Not everyone needs tax preparation services. So that's a good thing. Maybe it's just reconciliations, but they could find us at taxingcryptocurrency.com, www.taxingcryptocurrency.com. And on Twitter, our handle is @taxingcrypto. We try to post there as often as we can, just to provide some updates or feedback with what's going on in the tax realm. When you come to the website, we offer those 20-minute free consultations that I mentioned previously. You can book them on the website and see all the services we provide. It's kind of segmented into two different segments. There's reconciliations, there's tax preparation. Some people need one, some people need the other, some people need both. So that's really what we do, and we're free right now. Obviously, there's a ton of information coming in, not just from the crypto side, but we also have clients that don't have crypto activity. So I would say, with any tax professional, you don't want to wait. You don't want to wait till the last minute. Josh knows about this. You don't want to wait till the last minute. You want to get your taxes filed and all that information in, so it just alleviates that stress. If you have all the tax forms, if you have all the documentation, reach out to your tax professional, your CPA, reach out to us, get it in as soon as possible so we can get that thing filed before April 15th. If not, it's not the end of the world. You can go on extension, make your payment and have it filed at a later date, but then you have to deal with the potential headache of thinking about, you know, your taxes. No one really wants that. And if you're getting a refund, why not get that in right now? So I'd say as soon as possible, everyone just reach out to whoever you can, including us.
Sounds good. Thanks for coming on. Josh, thanks for making the connection and being here. And
as much as I don't want to learn about taxes, it's important, obviously, that if you're a trader, you know what the hell you're doing in that realm. So thank you, Jordan.
Yeah, Josh, did you make adjustments to the way you traded in 2018 based on what you learned in 2017?
My trades were affected in 2017 by taxes, just mentally. Like, I knew that I would have this massive tax burden already. So it did change how I traded a little bit in 2018. So we'll see. I haven't gotten the results back yet, but we'll see. It's like you're waiting for this cancer diagnosis. You know, is it like stage one or is it stage four? So we'll see. Yeah.
All right. We'll leave it at that.
Well, don't worry, Josh. We'll take care of you.
Yeah. Very sad analogy. We'll leave it there. That's a good way to leave a tax conversation.
that was very sad. All right. Well, thanks, guys. Have a great day.
All right, Jordan, Josh, we'll catch y'all next time.
Sounds good.
Monuments crumble in the blink of an eye. The easy river has just run dry. In a house of cards, I feel the breeze wound so tight I can barely breathe.